Okay, what I'm going to try to do here this evening, as best I possibly can, is stick to the notes, but I'll probably digress. This is an enormous subject, and as I say here in the beginning of your notes, it might be the most important thing in the entire course, because everything that we do in the church is ordered towards helping you fall in love with Jesus Christ. Everything that we do. That's why we have Mass. That's why we have sacraments. That's why we pay the bills. That's why we mow the grass. That's why we hold classes. That's why we do everything. What is it all about? What's it all about? We're not creating a museum here. We're not maintaining a business. We're trying ultimately to help souls know what it means to fall into a deep love union with the person of Jesus Christ. Now, without prayer, you can't do that. Another reason why this is so important today is that if you get this right, I think everything else will fall into place. If you don't get this right, well, nothing will fall into place until you do. So I want to try to help you here this evening to understand what a prayer life is and what to do when you pray. So this is partly information, but it's more than anything else an exhortation to live a daily prayer life. Now, if you ask most people, do you pray? They might say yes, but I think the honest answer is that no, they really don't. And if you ask people why they don't pray, they would probably say something like, well, I don't know what to do, or I don't get anything out of it. Somebody once asked Bill Gates, do you go to church on Sunday? And he said, no. And they said, why? And he says, well, because there are so many more profitable things I can do with my time. Now, he's wrong, of course, but at least he's honest. I'll give him that much. Most people misunderstand prayer fundamentally. Most people think that prayer is something you do so that God will give you something you want. And they'll say, well, I prayed and it didn't work. And I'll say, what do you mean work? Well, I didn't get what I was asking for. As if God is a Santa Claus who gives out gifts. As if God is a genie in the bottle who grants wishes. A lot of people, deep in their heart of hearts, that's what they think prayer is. And they figure that if God doesn't hold up his half of the bargain, they got gypped. Now, believe it or not, that's paganism. If you could go back to the ancient world, if you could go back to the Greek gods on Mount Olympus or the temples on the Acropolis in ancient Athens, and you could talk to the people and ask them, what are you doing? Well, I'm offering a cereal offering to Aphrodite. Why? Well, because there's a girl in town, I want her to fall in love with me, you know, and she's the goddess of love, and I'm supposed to offer a cereal offering. And basically, they've got a little transaction going on whereby if I do my part, the divinities will do their part. That's essentially paganism. I hope that if nothing else, what we can do this evening is move beyond that. Because if you want to understand the nature of prayer, understand this. It's your participation in a mysterious love relationship with God. It's not just something that you do when you kneel down and say certain words. It's also how you live your life. St. Paul once said, pray without ceasing. And by that, he didn't mean like recite prayers endlessly because nobody could do that. But does the way you live your life after you're finished your prayer reflect what you were praying about when you started praying in the first place? Because there's an important thing about prayer to understand. The way you pray and the way you live are inextricably intertwined. One enriches the other. If you hear what Jesus says in the Gospels and hear what the church teaches and hear what the saints have lived, and you try your darndest to live that, your virtue is going to grow, and guess what? When you pray, you're going to pray better. And if you pray better, it's going to help you. It's going to make it easier for you when you go and you try to go out there and do the right thing. One enriches the other. An image that I like to think of for prayer, imagine this. Imagine that you're very cold and someone gives you one of those heat packs. You know those heat packs you can get? And the warmth goes from the heat pack to your hands and it kind of slowly warms up all of you and you just prayer is a contact with God, maybe at a few set hours of the day, that has the consequence of transforming your whole self. But you have to make that contact. Somebody once asked Pope John Paul II, how do you pray? And he says, well, I wake up early in the morning, and in that time I go into a deep, deep place spiritually. And I draw up from that deep place in prayer nourishment that helps me for the rest of the day. Okay, so what does prayer do? Strengthens you for your living. But please understand that what you live the rest of the day is also under your free control. And how you choose to act the rest of the day is going to affect how you go back to pray. Because there's one relationship that you're living. Does this make sense? I hope this is clear. I heard it once phrased this way. Pray well and you will pray better. Pray often and you will pray more. But pray little and you will pray less. Pray poorly and you will not pray at all. It's very important to understand also, I think you'll find a lot of people when they talk about prayer, if you get a book on prayer or advice on prayer, they'll start to tell you about techniques. They say, what you want to do is get a rug. You want to light a candle. You want to light some incense. You want to try some breathing exercises. If you understand the point that I'm trying to make here, you'll see that that doesn't make any sense. Because a technique can't help you in a relationship. What will help you in your relationship? Giving your time, giving your heart, giving your all. When two people love one another, they want to spend time with one another. And they can pass time and hours and talking about nothing, right? About nothing. Back in the days when people talked on phones, a teenager would stereotypically occupy the phone line in the house for the longest time, and the mother would say, get off the phone. I'll get off the phone in a minute, in 10 minutes, 20 minutes. Finally, he'd hang up the phone after talking with his sweetheart, and mother would say, what were you talking about? And what would he say in reply? Nothing. Nothing. They were just spending time. Last time any relationship in your life flourished, tell me if this isn't true. You gave it carefree timelessness, right? You stopped looking at the clock. That's how relationships grow. Give them time and don't look at the clock. Even people you don't like, you'll start to get along with if you do that. Okay, so please don't, I mean, maybe a laying candle will help you, but lighting a candle, having a prayer rug setting, but please don't think that's going to make your prayer. Any more than, I don't know, if you took your sweetheart to the fanciest restaurant in town, that's not going to make your relationship come alive. It's not going to hurt, but it's not the relationship, is it? Right? I knew a man and woman, they got married, and they made their wedding cake out of Twinkies. Now, they saved a lot of money on their wedding cake, but that wasn't the point. The point was they met over splitting a Twinkie, and they wanted their wedding cake to be Twinkies. So it just goes to show, you know, relationship is a lot deeper than dollars and cents, isn't it? Well, there's no technique to prayer. Another important thing to remember is that if you want to pray well, the beginning of the prayer life is converting your heart. Anything else is a sham. You're going to say one thing to God with your words in the morning, and you're going to say something else to God with your deeds throughout the day, correct? Now, I'm not saying you can't have weaknesses and fall, but this does preclude, like, deliberately sinning. Deliberately, and just not caring. You're just not going anywhere with the Lord. There's a little joke, a little quip. Mr. Smith, he went to church. He never missed a Sunday. But Mr. Smith, he went to hell for what he did on Monday, right? So be careful. Now, prayer, a relationship with God, one affects the other. Let's take a look at another important question. That is, why pray? Here's a question for you. If God knows everything, and he knows what you need, and he knows what you need before you even ask him, then why bother praying? Doesn't he already know? I mean, what if you pray in the wrong way? You're making God mad? If you pray in the wrong way every week, you're making God madder and madder every week? Why pray? Well, there's two good reasons why to pray. Okay, here's the first. And you may have never thought of this before, but I ask you to kind of mull over this. You are, right now, where you sit, dissatisfied with your life, with the world. No matter what it is, you want more. You're not quite at rest. There's something that you're looking for. There's something that you're striving for. There's something that might agitate you. There's something that might depress you. There's something you might be running from. There's something you might be complaining about. But wherever you are right now, all of us, your priest included, we are not satisfied with the status quo. And that's because, whether you've known this or not, just something to mull over, you were made for more than this world has to offer. And you know what's fascinating about this? The most successful people in the world who get everything that you think your heart might desire, once they get it, what do they invariably say? It's very, very empty. Who's ever heard of Jim Carrey, the actor or the comedian? He hasn't done a lot in recent years, but maybe a decade ago, two decades ago, it was quite a big deal. Oh, he once had a quote. The words to this effect, I don't know if it's the exact quote, but he said, "I wish everyone could become rich and famous just so they could know how empty it really is. If you could have everything you wanted, if I could give you a magic wand to make all your wishes come true, if you get all the money in the world, all the fame in the world, if you could look any way you wanted to look or be of any age or of any state of health, if you wanted to have any skills, abilities, greatest singer, dancer, whatever it might be, you'd have a quick thrill. And in the long run, you'd say, is this it? There's got to be more than this." And what I want to tell you right here is there's a reason for that. You're made for more than this world have to offer. And this makes you unlike any other creature in all the world. Animals are content being animals. Cows are content chewing their cud. Turnips are content growing in the ground. Squirrels are content to gather acorns. But you are not content. And I hope this saves you a lot of struggle. I hope you believe me when I say the reason that you're not content is because you're made for something transcendent, something beyond this universe. There's a deep, empty ache in the soul that stirs and churns like a volcano, a deep inner ache that you can't quite explain. Who's ever heard of Simon and Garfunkel? Mm-hmm. Old-timey band. Anyway, they once had a song, big hit song, and a line from that song said, "I'm empty and I'm aching and I don't know why." And the reason why it was a hit was that everyone who listened to the song could identify with the sentiment. I'm empty and I'm aching and I don't know why. Why? Because you don't know God. That's why. And it drives your actions and it drives your desires and it drives your plans. And no matter what you accomplish, it never seems to be enough. And so people have amusements and parties and they go buy something more or they move their house or they switch their job. And it's never enough. Power, fame, lust, drugs, music, always more. Why? Because you were made for infinity. One of my favorite little examples, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, is that the suicide rates are highest among the wealthiest. Did I mention that before? It's one of my favorite little... Consider this. You and I, where we are, trusting no one here is a multi-billionaire, right? Trusting. And if you are... come see me after class. We could use a donation or two. But trusting that you're not. You're struggling. You're struggling to pay the bills. You're struggling to pay the car bill. You're struggling to pay the rent. You're struggling to save enough money for college. You're struggling to set aside enough so that maybe you can move to a nice neighborhood. You're struggling. You've got a purpose where you're struggling. And that purpose keeps you going. But the funny thing about the hyper-wealthy is they don't struggle. Whatever they want, they just buy it. And no matter what they buy, they always got so much left that they don't even know the money's gone. They don't even know it's not in their account. And as a consequence, they're forced to face something that you and I aren't forced to face. They're forced to face their inner emptiness. We don't necessarily have to face it because we keep struggling and we keep creating short-term goals for ourselves. Let me finish school first. Then let me get another advanced degree. Then let me get a house. Then let me, et cetera, et cetera. And these little things keep us going. But the wealthy, the hyper-wealthy... they don't have these. And so they face their inner emptiness. That's why they take their own lives. Because they've got everything they think their heart could want. And they realize that it's not enough. Because once upon a time, you know, someone once told them that God was what you were made for. And they didn't listen. They didn't believe. So I hope you believe. All right. Thoughtful people realize this. And they begin to seek God. I got three little reasons here that people will turn for God. I found that people turn to God for any one of three reasons. First of all, jadedness. People realize something about themselves that disgusts them when they commit serious sins. This is often the case with substance abuse, and it's often the case with sins of lust. They do a sin, they commit a sin, they feel so sick in their heart, and sometimes that sickness causes them to turn to God, right? God works through all kinds of things, and that's one of them. Another one is weariness with mediocrity. Now, a lot of us live our lives, we keep doing the same thing, we work our work, we go to church, we say our prayer. We never quite rise above a refined mediocrity, and something inside of us says, is this it? Is this it? I need more than this. I was made for more than this. Life is passing me by, and I just feel like I'm missing my purpose. And sometimes that leads people to seek God. Okay, these people made no strong effort to avoid sin. They gossip. They're impatient. They indulge in petty vanities about their appearance. They don't really care very much about their faith. They don't try very hard. And something says, hey, have you ever considered, you know, starting to live a life of self-forgetfulness for others and really giving your all? And it can lead them to God. Then the third one is a sudden grace. Some people just suddenly get hit. You've heard of St. Francis of Assisi. Do you know the life of St. Francis of Assisi? Raise your hand if you know the story of the life of Francis of Assisi. I'll tell you real briefly, just real briefly. Francis of Assisi, everybody knows him as the guy who loved the animals, correct? Okay, real, real thin slice of St. Francis. Francis has been known as the most Christ-like person who's lived since Jesus Christ himself. Just, he really got the spirit of Christ right. But he was not always that way. When he was a young man, he was a son of a wealthy cloth merchant, the richest man in town, life of the party, the kind of guy that every girl wishes they could be with and every guy wishes they could be. That was Francis of Assisi. He had it all, and a great future, and lots of money. Something hit him. And one day he decided that he was going to give his whole life to God. Something hit him, sudden grace. It happened to St. Paul. You know, he got knocked off his horse. It happened to a number of saints. And sometimes that happens. But the idea that you're incomplete, that's why you want to pray. It's never going to go away until you address it. Here's another reason why you want to pray. And this is even more compelling. The closer you are to God, the better you are for everybody else you know. Every year, we hear little kids' confessions. I just got finished hearing a bunch of little kids' confessions. Second graders about to make the first communion, and invariably, every year, when second graders make their confessions to make the first communion, parents come in after second graders to go to confession. And of course, I'll make a little joke. You're the biggest second grader I've ever seen. What brings you here? And they always say the same thing. Well, Father, my kid's taking after me, and I'm beginning to realize I got to get my act together. And they realize why they should be praying, because people are depending on them. You know, your priest, he stands up there and says Mass every Sunday, and all these people are looking at him. And what do they want to see? They want to see an image of Jesus Christ. That's what they want. And your priest sees that, and he thinks, I've got to get my act together. These people are counting on me. I was going through a very difficult time in my life, and I got a chance to speak to a cloistered, contemplative, missionaries of charity religious sister for 10 minutes. Better than a week's retreat. 10 minutes with her was absolutely transformative. And it wasn't what she said. It was who she was. It was just, she was just radiant with joy, with purpose. Every word was, she was so helpful in such a short time. You want to pray because people are depending on you. That's why you want to pray. Because your spouse is depending on you. Because the spouse you haven't even met yet is depending on you. Because children who aren't even born yet are depending on you. Because friends you haven't even met yet are depending on you. The more you're immersed in God, the better you're going to be for them. Holy people make a bigger impact, okay? So that's why you want to pray. Now let's answer this biggest question. What is prayer? And it's so simple. It's so simple. Prayer is raising your mind and heart to God. That's what prayer is. What are you? I've said you're made in God's image, right? What does that mean? It means two things. It means you have a mind to know the truth. And it means you have a heart to freely choose. That's who you are spiritually. Now, you are physically what you are physically, right? Man, woman, various ages, various hair colors, all the rest, various backgrounds. But spiritually, we're all similar in this sense. We all have a mind that can know the truth. We all have a heart that can freely choose. Praying is incredibly simple. When you raise your mind and your heart to God, you're praying. So you'll find these atheists who say, I don't understand what prayer is. And I feel like saying to them, you've done it a million times. A million times. If you've ever walked down a dark alley and some shadowy figure you think is following you, and you cast your mind and heart up to God and say, God, come and help me, you've prayed. If you've ever sat in a class and you've heard the teacher say, pop quiz today, believe me, you've prayed, right? If you've ever had a loved one, health teetering on the brink, you turn your heart and your mind up to God. God, come. I don't even know if you're up there, but if you're up there, come and help me. Your mind and your heart, that is your thoughts and your attention, turn to God. That's prayer. Everybody got it? It's that simple. And if you're not doing that, you're not praying. I don't care what words you're saying. That's why your words need to accompany your mind and your heart. The more your mind and heart are lifted up to God, the more you're praying, period. Okay? That's what prayer is. Now, as I said before, it's a relationship with God. As I touched on when we first got started, I said that it's you touching the depths of who God is, and it's being transformed as a consequence. It's the most natural thing in the world. And you don't even realize it. You're doing it all the time. There is a little bit more to be said, and that's what I'm going to get to hopefully here this evening, but that you please understand what that is. You want to do that every single day. You want to take time every single day out of your schedule and schedule it, if you have to, in which you're going to raise your mind and heart to God. Your relationship with God depends on it, okay? It's the most natural thing in the world, and if you do it faithfully, it grows. And it becomes the most effortless thing in the world. And you get closer to God, and you get transformed, and you become more like Him. So the most important thing is to start. What do you do to start? Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to take time. That's the first thing I would like to tell you. If you want to pray, you must lop off time to pray. We'll talk about how much time in just a moment, but it's like anything else. If you want to eat dinner, you actually have to set aside some time where you're going to open your mouth and put food in your mouth, or you're not going to ever eat dinner. If you want to develop a prayer life, you have to have some time, and it really helps you if you set aside the same amount of time, if you set aside a certain hour of the day. God doesn't care, but it does help you. It helps you to be consistent. Please don't ever say, my work is my prayer. It's a sham. It's a dodge. Imagine a couple where they never talked to each other. They never spent time with each other. They never hung out on the porch and watched the sunset. They never shared a cup of coffee in the morning and watched the sunrise. They never went to a movie and asked, what'd you think of that? They never went out to dinner and just, you know, enjoyed their time together. But all they did was their taxes. Or they stood in line at the Walmart. And then they said, well, you know, our work is our relationship. It's like, no, you don't have a relationship. Not if you don't give it time. Please understand, it's the same with God. It needs time. And that does take a little bit of doing on your part. And it's more mysterious than a person. Don't get me wrong. I understand that. But it does take time. Okay? Set aside time and be yourself. Now, let's talk about kinds of prayer. Okay? Let's talk about kinds of prayer. And hopefully this will help you to understand what to do when you pray. Okay, everything I'm about to tell you comes from St. Teresa of Avila. St. Teresa of Avila is probably the church's greatest authority in history telling us how to pray. What did Teresa of Avila do? She wrote about what prayer is. That's what she did. It's like she left behind a roadmap of what prayer is and how it unfolds and what to expect and stages and all this. And her writings hold true for everybody. It's like she mapped the mysterious path of prayer. If you're ever curious, you can go ahead and look up her book, The Interior Castle. And she talks about seven stages that people go through. And dag nabbit, she's absolutely right. Okay, just something a little, if you're curious. But Teresa said, if you think about your soul as being like a garden, and if you think about God's grace as being like water, how do you water your garden? Three ways. Now remember, she lives in the 16th century, okay? So back then, three ways. Number one, you can go to a well, you can drop in a bucket, you can pull water up out of the well, you can throw the water onto your garden, and you can go back and you get more water. You can water your garden that way. It takes a lot of work, takes a lot of time. If you wanted to save a little bit at work and a little bit of time, you could, say, dig a little irrigation ditch, maybe off a river, and you could let the water flow through that way. certainly better, but what's the best way of all to water your garden? Let it rain. Let it rain. Nothing waters your garden better and more effortlessly than rain. And she used those three images to talk about three ways of praying. And those three ways of praying are right here on your notes. They're vocal, meditative, and contemplative. So let's go through each one of them, okay? First of all, vocal prayer is really simple. It's anything at all that involves words. Is the Mass vocal prayer? Yes. Is the Rosary vocal prayer? Yes. Is the Our Father vocal prayer? Yes. If you're scared and you say, God, come and help me, is that vocal prayer? Yes. Anything at all that involves words is vocal prayer, okay? Now, vocal prayer is the lowest kind of prayer. It's always necessary, though. Consider, say, a couple of sweethearts, and they just couldn't possibly be closer. And they can communicate with one another just by shooting each other a glance. And everybody knows what I'm talking about. Will there ever come a day in which they don't need to talk to each other? In which they don't need to say, would you please pass the butter? Would you please empty the dishwasher? No. Talking is always necessary, correct? No matter who you are, no matter how close you are. And vocal prayer is always necessary. Just because I'm saying it's the lowest doesn't mean it's not always necessary. But let me try to fill that idea out just a little bit more. Imagine a couple of sweethearts that really know each other really well. They might communicate more just by saying good morning than other people could communicate in a half an hour, right? Because their relationship is so deep that every word is just drenched in meaning. That's how deep your vocal prayer can get, if the rest of your prayer life gets strong too. But please don't think you're ever going to move beyond vocal prayer. It's not the highest kind of prayer, but it's the most natural. This is something that will grow and become more meaningful as your prayer life grows. But that's just kind of by way of introduction. The deepest kind of prayer is mental. And there's two kinds here that I have listed, meditative and contemplative. Let me try to explain what that means. Here's meditative prayer. Meditative prayer is when you take a prayer and you kind of just talk to God about the words in your heart. For example, let's go through a couple of prayers together, shall we? Let's go first of all, the Our Father, which everybody just rattles off like a machine gun. But think about this. Let's go through the Our Father. Let's just talk about a few words. Our. As soon as I say the word our, my relationship with all of you has just changed. I didn't say my Father. I said our Father. What does that just mean that we are to one another? Strangers? Neighbors? Fellow citizens? A lot more than that. Now, spiritually speaking, we speak of each other as brothers and sisters in Christ, alive with the same life. If you want to pray the Our Father and stop just on the word our, you can talk to God about that. You can say, wow, Lord, there's this person I really don't get along with. Help me to remember that he's my brother in Christ. That's meditative prayer. Okay? Or Father. I think a lot of people think of God as this mysterious force out there somewhere past Alpha Centauri. In fact, I think part of the reason why people like Star Wars is because of the Force. And that's about as deep as some people's spiritual life gets. They think they'd be more accurate if they called God our force, who art in outer space. But Father knows you. Think about a dad with a newborn baby. It's not a bad image for who God is with you. Pray about that. Talk to God about that. Jesus used to call God his Abba. Have you heard that before? What's Abba? Anybody know what Abba is? Abba is baby talk. When a little baby starts to speak, they go, dad, 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 dad. And they say, what do the parents say? They say, oh, he just said daddy. And we say, dad, dad. But in the Middle East, for some funny reason, they hear not dad, dad, but Abba. Abba is dada. Abba is daddy. And Jesus called the creator of the universe his dada. And what does that tell you about the closeness of the relationship? You can pray about that. You can talk to God about it. And I could go on, our Father who art in heaven. I mean, every single phrase. I could go on for like an hour on this. I've got like a little meditation on it. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Now there's a line to pray about. You've just asked God to forgive you in as much and only as much as you forgive other people. Are you really going to live your life harboring resentments? Because if you do, you've just given God carte blanche permission not to forgive you for what you've done. Now think about that one in your prayer. That's meditative prayer. You can take any prayer you like. Now don't pick a prayer you don't like. Don't take a prayer you don't know. Take something you do know. Personally, I recommend the Psalms. Go into the Psalms and go through them, and you will find a psalm to match whatever your mood is. And every psalm is a prayer. And you can talk to God about the Psalms. Find one you like. Might take a little bit of poking, but you'll find one you like. Here's one I like. Psalm 34. I will bless the Lord at all times, his praise ever on my lips. Look to him that you might be radiant with joy. So let's talk about that for just a second. Here's me going down to pray, and I take Psalm 34. I will bless the Lord at all times. So stop right there and talk to God about it. I will bless the Lord at all times. Really? At all times? How about traffic? How about if you run over a bit of a tire that was left in the road and it rips off your back bumper? And there you are in the rain by the side of the highway and your cell phone's dead. Are you going to bless the Lord at all times then? Well, if you really understand prayer and God and this, you will bless the Lord at all times. But you can ask for God to help you to do that. And maybe you don't bless the Lord every Monday morning when you wake up, right? But maybe you should. His praise ever on my lips. Here's one of my favorite little lines from that psalm. Look to him that you might be radiant with joy. Now ask yourself this question in the silence of your hearts. Are you radiant with joy? Don't answer. Okay? Don't answer. Most people, honest answer, I'm really not radiant with joy. Well, let's talk about that. Psalm says, look to him that you might be radiant with joy. Do you think maybe the reason why you're not radiant with joy is that you're looking to something else? Maybe you're looking at the news too much. That'll keep you from being radiant with joy, guaranteed. Maybe you're looking at the stocks that day too much. Maybe you're not remembering God's presence enough. Maybe if you remembered God's presence more, you have a little bit more to be joyful about. That's something to talk to God about. That's meditative prayer. Got it? Okay, that's how you pray. Find a passage you like. Don't find a passage of the Bible you don't like. Find a passage you do like. Give it 10 minutes and watch it change you. This is called Lectio Divina, divine reading. It's centuries-old monastic wisdom. Find a place, open with a little tiny Hail Mary or Our Father, read a passage, think about it, talk to God about it in a calm and unhurried manner. Don't worry about getting through it. One sentence is enough. And that's your prayer. Maybe you give that 10 minutes a day. You'll find that it is transformative. Okay, that's meditative prayer. Now let me tell you about the next kind of prayer, which is contemplative prayer, and it's not what you think. When I talk to you about contemplative prayer, you probably imagine some monk or nun in a monastery floating in the sky, you know, in this mystical prayer union. What if I told you that contemplative prayer is something you've probably already done? You're probably already doing it. Here's what it is. It's when you go to pray. It could be a vocal prayer or it could be a meditative prayer, just like I got finished talking about. And instead of processing through, like I was telling you, the thoughts, the talking to God, the process, the active thinking about it, instead of all that, suddenly comes a moment in which you're just aware that God is there and there's no words at all. And maybe it lasts for 5 minutes, maybe it lasts for 2 minutes. Maybe you don't know how long it lasts. Maybe it comes and goes. That's contemplative prayer. If you're ever praying and that happens, please stop and let it last as long as it can last. It's not something you can do on your own. It's something that's given as a gift. And when it hits you, it's the most transformative thing that you can possibly do in prayer. For example, if you're praying in the Mass, the priest has to keep going. I can't stop and dwell on a word, but you can. So maybe there's a line in the Mass, it's truly right and just, our duty and our salvation always and everywhere to give you thanks. And you think, wow, you know, I just suffered a terrible loss, a death in the family, and I'm not anywhere like near giving God thanks. God, come and help me. And maybe you sort of just feel God's embrace at that moment. There's no words to describe it, but you know he's there. And you know that he's there, and you know that he knows that you know that he's there, and it's enough. Rest in that as long as you can. It's called contemplative prayer. Okay? And that is deeply, deeply transformative. You can't cause it. It's given like a gift. It's infused. It is a direct participation in the inner life of the Trinity. It's a transformation. You're gazing on the beautiful beauty of the Lord. It transforms you kind of like catching a suntan. You know, you don't even have to do anything. Just let it hit you. It's not thinking about yourself. Please understand. It's not introspection. It's not dwelling on your life. It's not dwelling on your feelings. It's not dwelling on your thoughts. It's not dwelling on your emotions. It's not dwelling on you at all. That's the whole point. It's an awareness that God is present. It could last 5 minutes. It could last 1 minute. It could last, probably, usually doesn't last for more than 5 minutes, even if it lasts that long. Very, very rare does it last longer than that. People get distracted, right? But it's definitely not you dreaming about yourself. It's not anything you're doing at all. In fact, a good metaphor for contemplative prayer would be when you walk outside and the weather hits you, maybe it's a beautiful day, and you say, oh, it's a beautiful day. Or maybe it's a cold day, and you go, oh, dag nabbit, it's cold. Or maybe it's the sun is really strong, and you go, holy smack, that's a bright sun. It's something you immediately recognize and respond to. When contemplative prayer hits you, it's like that. It's something you recognize and respond to, so you don't generate it. I just want to clear up many misunderstandings here. You can't make it happen. It happens to you. But the reason I mention it is so that you'll know what it is, and that you'll remember that someone once told you, let it last as long as you can. Francis de Sales talks about it as having, he says, imagine having perfume of the costliest value in the palm of your hands. You just want it to last as long as it can. It's going to eventually slip through your fingers, but hold on to it just as long as you possibly can hold on to it. That's what his image for contemplative prayer. And in advanced stages, it really gets advanced. It's absolutely ecstatic. And they say that it's the greatest of all possible human experiences. St. Philip Neri, one of my favorite saints, once was saying Mass. I shouldn't say once. He was frequently saying Mass. And he had an agreement with his altar boy that if he lapsed into some kind of high mystical contemplative prayer and he lost track of time and he couldn't even say another word, the altar boy was to put out the candles, come back in an hour, light the candles again, and he'd probably be ready after an hour. So that's very, very advanced. That's not going to happen to too many people, but it does happen. So it's important to know it can become very, very advanced, this deep indwelling in God. So hopefully now you know a little bit more about what prayer is and how to do it. Okay, this is the most transformative thing, the effects of prayer. The virtues grow in you. Faults fade away. Complaining ends. Embracing of the cross begins. Forgiveness becomes possible. Sometimes it even becomes joyful. You abandon the idea that I have to have my way. You begin to see trifles as trifles. And let's face it, most things in life are trifles. Have you ever heard of that book, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, and It's All Small Stuff? Very wise. Very wise title. And as I said, your beneficial influence on other persons grows. Parents do their kids a great deal of good. And it leads to deeper prayer in everything. This is a little note of my own here at the end. Those who persevere in prayer have come back to me and say, I can't believe I wasted so much of my life not knowing what this is. So I try to share this with you, okay? Now, some famous questions about prayer that we can talk about. When? When should I pray? Will? Let you in on a little secret. There's a reason why most spiritual giants say their prayer in the morning before they eat breakfast. Why? Because first, they've understood how important it is to pray consistently. And they've understood how at any other time in the day, they keep getting interrupted, or something happens, or they can't set aside their prayer time. They can't rightly not answer the phone, or not answer the doorbell, or not respond to some emergency, because they're praying. The answer is pray whenever it's best for you, whenever you don't have distractions, but I'm really going to suggest that you probably... I took years not wanting to do this before I finally surrendered and did it. Years. I was probably already a priest for 2 years before I finally realized if I don't pray in the morning, I'm just not going to pray. So I ask you to consider that. Just be honest with yourself. You want to pray daily. It helps you if you're consistent about when. Anyone who's ever tried to develop a habit or develop a skill has recognized that this is something I have to do every day. I have to schedule it. I have to make it happen. It takes a little bit of discipline. It can become a habit. But I just want to kind of hint you in this direction. It's highly likely that you're going to need to wake up a little bit earlier and go to bed a little bit earlier to make that happen. It's highly likely. Okay? Not absolutely. God doesn't care when you pray, but it does help us. Okay? But make it a daily habit. Make it daily. Make it regular. How long? Depends on your life circumstances. It might shock you if I told you that everyone can pray at least 30 minutes a day. I'm convinced of that. I don't care how busy you are. People always find 30 minutes a day for something. A cup of coffee, catching up on the news, watching a television program, clicking around YouTube and coming to ridiculous articles and videos and things like that. And next thing you know, you're watching the history of the disco ball or something like that. You've gone down the rabbit hole. Everybody has 30 minutes. But the most important thing for how long is something that you know you can maintain. If you think you can only maintain 5 minutes of what I'm talking about, better to do 5 minutes consistently and add to it than to tell yourself you can do 20 and have to cut back. Why? Because it destroys your resolve. How many of you have set out to maybe a New Year's resolution or a Lenten resolution, and you're going to do this, and you fail, and then what happens? You just quit altogether, right? Right. You've tried it. I'm not going to eat any sugar. And then you have like a little Oreo cookie. What happens next? You have the rest of the bag of Oreo cookies, right? That's what happens. Well, better, you know, to set up yourself in a routine that you know you can keep. Maybe you'll have one day a week with an Oreo cookie and you can keep it. Whatever it is, let it be something you can sustain, okay? Because you don't want to quit. This is just too important. But let it be, you know, consistent and add to it. Don't let it be too long and have to cut it back, like I said. Another thing about prayer, distractions. People always talk about their distractions. They say, I get distracted. You must understand me when I say this. Distractions don't matter unless you're freely choosing them. Really. St. Teresa of Avila once said that distractions are to your prayer what temptations are to your moral life. Everybody's going to get tempted because you're broken. And everybody's going to get distracted because you're broken. As long as you don't give in to your distractions. Maybe you're got distracted with a Facebook. If you go back to God after your distraction, nothing's lost. Nothing's lost. God knows your weakness. He knows your frailty. But if you give in to your distraction, okay, that's a problem. Correct? Hope that makes sense. So please don't worry about distractions. Conditions for getting better in prayer, growing in prayer. It's really very simple. Strive to do God's will right where you are. If there's a sin, you know you're committing it, try to turn away from it. If there's a lack of generosity somewhere in your life, you're being stingy, try to be less stingy. But the condition for growing in prayer, really, apart from giving it time, is to try to live a good Christian life with the rest of the hours of the day. There's no growing in prayer unless you give yourself to God completely, because like I tried to say at the beginning, one enhances the other. Pray well, live well. Pray badly, live badly. The king doesn't give himself entirely to us, Teresa of Avila said, unless we give ourselves entirely to him. Let the whole of your effort be to become in conformity with God's will as best you can. If you do, your prayer will get better. If you don't, your prayer will get worse. Another thing about prayer, it doesn't depend on your life circumstances. A lot of people think it does. Right where you are right now, you're in the perfect place to take the next step closer to God. People say, well, if only I had a different job, I could pray better. If only I had more money. If only I didn't have such a long commute. Not really. Your prayer doesn't depend on your life circumstances. It depends on what you're ready to give right now. One of my favorite examples of this, Cardinal Nguyen Van Thuan. He was a prisoner in North Vietnam for 15 years. And when he was finished, somebody asked, what was it like? And he said, you know, it was like a big retreat. Like a big retreat. North Vietnamese prison. Or Father Walter Chizik was captured by the Soviet army in the times of Joseph Stalin. He sent to Siberia to do hard labor for 20 years. They thought he was dead. It was the John F. Kennedy administration. They finally realized he was alive and they negotiated for his release and had him sent back to the U.S. They were having masses said for his soul. They thought he was dead. They said, what was it like? And he says, oh, it was one of the most peaceful times of my whole life. Horrible conditions. So it really doesn't depend on your life circumstances. Your health, your age. You are right exactly where you need to be. All you have to do is start to say yes to God. Okay? And one of the best proofs of this is something that I've seen personally, and that is terminally ill. I've never seen anyone grow closer to God faster than the terminally ill. So I go to hospitals and I see people who are dying, and I'll go back and visit them again. People make decades of spiritual progress in just a few months. And they can let it all go. All the stuff they were so tied up about, they don't care. They only care about God and loving their family and all the things that mattered, and they don't care about the things that never mattered. And this can happen so fast. So don't think about your life circumstances. You are where you are in the perfect place right now to grow closer to God. Be generous. Go beyond what's required. Lovers never do the minimum, do they? They always want to give everything they can possibly give. Another thing about prayer is that you can go backwards. Prayer is not on a ratchet. It can regress. An acorn can grow into an oak tree, and an oak tree can wither and die. You can fall in love. You can fall out of love. Teresa of Avila says that God gives you 1,000 inner warnings before this happens, little pricks of conscience throughout the day, idle chatter, all kinds of things that might lead you to slide back. But it's not permanent. You can fall out of love. Just ask Judas Iscariot, right? Just ask Judas Iscariot. There is one thing that's important to remember about prayer too, and that there's one thing that is better than prayer. And that's charity that interrupts your prayer, believe it or not. And this is what all the saints say. But that if you're praying and someone interrupts you and they need you, you actually grow closer to God by dropping your prayer and helping them than you do by continuing to pray. Closer to God. Better and quicker, Teresa says. Better and quicker. So you're in the middle of prayer, the phone goes off, you go to the hospital. You're a fool if you keep on saying your prayer. Go to the hospital. Better and quicker. Okay? And lastly, here's a quote from St. Teresa. The most important thing is determination. Determination. Resolve that you're going to pray. Resolve that you're going to stick with it. Resolve that you're going to make it a part of your life. If you resolve, if you persevere, you will arrive. If you don't quit, you won't be abandoned by God. No matter how hard you might have to work, no matter who might complain of you, whether you reach your goal or die on the way, even if the very world dissolves before you, don't you quit. And those are a few little thoughts to help you to maybe orient you about what prayer is and how to do it. Now, at the very end of your notes, there's two bulletin columns. And I printed these about a year ago in the parish bulletin. And I was so amazed at how people responded to these. So I reprinted them just because people thought they were, so helpful. And I hope that you find those things helpful too.